ओम हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम गणानां त्वा गणपतिं हवामहे नारायणाय सूर्यनारायणाय There's a big question always, what is the actual, the scripture for the Hindus? And we have to be very clear, even though we have varieties of religious and spiritual literature available in all the Indian languages, the forest source book, we say the means of knowledge of the reality, and to understand the connection between the creator, creation and the individual. We understand the connection between the individual, the Lord, the creator and the Jagat, the creation. This is a fact. One has to understand this fact. The connection between Jiva, Jagat, Ishwaraha. When I say Jiva, Jagat, Ishwaraha, individual, the Jiva, Jagat, the creation, Ishwaraha, the creator. In all over India, all different states, all of them will say one thing is common for all of us. Knowing the Lord, knowing who the Lord is the ultimate goal of human life. Because that is moksha. They are the same, one and the same. That is why whether we call it self-knowledge or knowledge of the Lord or knowledge of the connection between the individual, the Lord and the universe, it is one and the same. And for this is the ultimate knowledge, this is the absolute knowledge. Why we say, even though there is different types of, there are so many things to be known, this knowledge, this particular knowledge is said to be the absolute knowledge. Knowledge of the absolute reality is the absolute knowledge. And this is the ultimate knowledge also. And we say this is the exalted knowledge also. Why? Because only this is the knowledge which frees a human mind from all limitations and all sorrows and all problems. This is the knowledge, this is the only knowledge, the solution for all problems. How much ever you study, how much ever you acquire knowledge of any discipline, any field, and that knowledge is good. That helps you to have better infrastructure, to acquire more artha, to enjoy more pleasures. Understand? That's good. But that, I don't say it's bad. But that is not exalted knowledge. It's not considered to be the exalted of the knowledge. Exalted, that is not considered to be the absolute knowledge or ultimate knowledge. Why? Because it doesn't serve. It doesn't relieve you, that knowledge. Knowledge of anything other than the self, other than the reality, other than the Bhagavan, doesn't free one from limitations and problems and sorrows. That is why this is said to be the absolute knowledge. It is said to be the ultimate knowledge. And we also say gaining this knowledge, gaining this knowledge is as good as gaining knowledge of everything else. If you know so much, what do you do achieve? What do you gain any knowledge for? So gaining the knowledge of the reality, gaining the self-knowledge, is as good as gaining knowledge of everything else. Because the reason is it frees you from all limitations. It relieves you from all the problems of life. And that's why it's also called a spiritual knowledge. Only when a person has the aspiration for this knowledge and he is also a spiritual aspirant, we call him a spiritual person. Without desire for this knowledge, there is no spirituality, one does not become really spiritual. And I also told you in the very beginning, so if a person naturally becomes spiritual, he has desire for this knowledge, and naturally he is also prayerful and worshipful, so he is also religious, and he also knows the value of values in the context of self-knowledge, therefore he also becomes committed to live a life of values is also ethical. A spiritual person is religious as well as ethical. Whereas the people who are ethical and religious need not be spiritual. And for this spiritual knowledge, we need a means of knowledge. And the means of knowledge we have is the basic techno. We have threefold literature we have. Mainly, the source book, if we ask the source means of knowledge, is the Vedaha, Shrutihi. Shrutihi is the source of knowledge. The authentic pramanam, the means of knowledge. And the Shruti, consisting of three parts of the Veda, yes, Karma Kanda, Upasana Kanda and Jnana Kanda, this Shrutihi consists of mantras, consists of statements of facts, which are known by the word mantras, and they were not written by anybody. Veda is not a work of, it's not an intellectual, it's not a product of the in a given individual's intellect. It was not written by anybody. So these rishis were continuously in meditation, and they got the facts revealed to them. Rishis got the facts, subtle facts, revealed to them. That is why rishihi means one who saw the fact, one who received the knowledge, one who received these facts revealed to him. So we call them revelations. They call known as rishis. Rishihi itself means the seer of the truth, the knower of the truth. We cannot say rishis wrote the Vedas. We shouldn't say that. Rishis received the Vedas, got the Vedas revealed to them. They only had revelations. They never wrote the Vedas. So we cannot say who is the author of the Vedas? Nobody. Understand? They got the revelations. And later on, we have another literature, and which also reveal the other literature, which also reveal the same subject matter of the Shruti without distorting it, deviating from it. And that literature is called what? Smritihi. The second scriptural literature which reveal the same thing. What Veda says, but they do not reveal the same. They magnify it, they personify it. They personify the facts, abstract facts revealed in the Shruti, but without distorting Vedic injections, they reveal the same thing. They teach, highlighting values. And the second type of literature is called Smritihi. Why? Smritihi, we can say, authored by rishis. Rishis wrote the Smritihi. So the word Smritihi itself means what? Memory. So memory means what? We can understand the rishis, they remembered all the revelations, all that they received in their meditation. They remembered very well because they understood the facts so clearly, and they expressed their vision and knowledge in the Smriti. We can say Smriti was written by rishis, but not Veda, Shruti. Rishis received the Shrutihi and rishis wrote the Smritihi. That you have to remember. And Smriti, under Smriti literature, we can say that 36 Puranas, 18 Mahapuranas, 18 Upapuranas, Mahabharatam the epic, Ramayanam the epic, all these come under the category of smritihi. And the last one we have is the sutram. Sutram means aphorism. We also have some scriptural literature in the form of cryptic aphorisms. Sutram, short code language, okay, in a very short, brief sentence, kind of very few words, and big facts are revealed. Sutram. So now we have, understand, we have Shruti, Shrutihi, Smritihi, and Sutrani, or Sutram. And of the three, these three are very, very main. These three are the prasthanam for us. Prasthanam, the means of knowledge. The Shrutihi, you have to remember, Shrutihi, rishis got the Shruti through revelations. Okay, Shruti was revealed to the rishis. Smriti was written by rishis. And Sutram also was written by rishis. Sutram actually is the very brief sentence consisting of very few words, the cryptic, you know, aphorisms, which serve as the analytical study. It's called Mimamsa. We have Brahma Sutrani and also Nyaya Sutrani. We have sutras, many sutras we have. Jaiminiya Nyaya Sutrani and Brahma Sutrani. We have Sutrani. The Sutrani, now if you say what is Sutram for, in fact this Brahma Sutrani, Mimamsa, it's called Mimamsa. Brahma Sutrani or this Jaiminiya Nyaya Sutrani we have for Karma Kanda and also for Jnana Kanda. Here they serve as the Mimamsa Shastra. Mimamsa means the analytical study of the Veda, the statements of facts revealed in the Veda. So you analyze a given state, take a given statement from the Veda and analyze the meaning of it. Why this sentence has only this meaning? Why it cannot have another meaning? Why it shouldn't have another meaning? What is the root meaning? In that context, this means only this, like that. It's, you know, the authentic explanation. This sentence cannot mean other than this. Like that, they analyze the analytical study of the Vedantic statements of, or Vedic statements of facts. No? Is the actually the sutra literature. Now, these are the three. And of the three, do we study all the Vedas, all the Shruti, Smriti and Sutrani? No. Understand? We study, from the Shruti, what we study? Only Upanishads, the Jnana Kanda part. From the Shruti, we study Upanishads, the Jnana Kanda part of the Shrutihi. We leave the first two parts. Karma Kanda, Upasana Kanda, part of Shruti we leave. We study only the Jnana Kanda, the end portion of the Shrutihi, consisting of Upanishads. Later on, if we go to Smritihi, even in Smriti, we are not studying all the Puranas. Even though you go and listen to some Katha Kalakshepam, all those things, we mainly study only Bhagavad Gita from the Mahabharatam. Of the Smriti, we study only Bhagavad Gita from Mahabharatam. Then, Brahma Sutrani, we will study only the Vyasas. Brahma Sutra, of the Sutrani, we study only Brahma Sutrani. Now, what do we know from here? Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita and Brahma Sutrani, these three, okay, are known as Prasthanatrayam. Prasthanatrayam. So, when you say Prasthanatrayam, Prasthanam itself means a path, the root, like that. And Prasthanatrayam means a set of threefold means of, three means of knowledge. But what is the source means of knowledge? Upanishad. You should remember that. and to enter into the study of the Shruti or Smriti, Bhagavad Gita or Upanishads, to understand them correctly, before we enter there, we need the basic knowledge. That's why always we say, one has to study the Shastram with the help of the teacher, who knows the teaching methodology, Sampradaya. Otherwise, we can't understand anything by ourselves. No? And here, one needs to know all the technical terms connected to the Vedantic study. The words are known as Vedanta Paribhasha or Vedanta Paribhashika Shabdaha. Paribhashika Shabdaha or Paribhasha means what? Technical terms one should know to understand Vedanta Shastram, Upanishads and Gita. The basic, and also how the Upanishads present the systematic development of the subject matter. One has to understand that also. So to understand the systematic development of the subject matter, the presentation of subject matter, to understand the technical terms, one has to study a much simpler text in the beginning, which itself gives the core vision of the Vedanta. Then one has to study Gita and Upanishads. It'd be very, very clear. That's why we are doing it here. I was repeating so many times and going slowly, everything. Because this helps the mind, the gross mind, slowly becomes subtle and start appreciating subtle facts. This listening is very, very, very important. And to understand that systematic development of subject matter, presentation of subject matter, and the technical terms used in Vedanta, we study first Prakarana Grantaha. Okay, a textbook, Vedantic text only, known as Vedantic means the textbook consisting of the Vedantic subject matter, which also presents the same Vedantic subject matter without distorting the, contradicting with the statements of the Vedanta, which also presents the same subject matter. The textbook is called what? Prakarana Grantaha. And there are many Prakarana Grantas, so many, and they were written by the later Acharyas. Adi Shankaracharya himself has written many, many, many Prakarana Grantas, small ones and big ones, so many has written. There are so many Prakarana Grantas. Much smaller ones, smallest one, and even you can say Ekashloki, he has written so many books Adi Shankara himself has written. And also other Acharyas who came in the tradition of Shankaracharya, lineage of Shankaracharya, also have written many other Prakarana Grantas. So Prakarana Grantaha is a textbook which also consists of the same Vedantic subject matter without distorting or deviating from the way it has been presented in the Veda. Okay, that's Prakarana Grantha. And is Tattva Bodaha, that's how we come to the point now. Tattva Bodaha we have taken for study in the beginning to have correct understanding is what? One of such Prakarana Granthas. Tattva Bodha, because you will know what is Tattva Bodha. If you say, go and tell people you are attending Vedanta classes, they ask you what are you studying. And if you say we are studying Tattva Bodha, then you should know what is it. Tattva Bodha is not a Shrutihi, not a Smritihi, not a Vimasutram, but it is a Prakarana Grantha which helps you to understand the technical terms of Vedanta and also the development of the subject matter in the Shastram, the presentation of subject matter in the Shastram. This is Tattva Bodha. And Tattva Bodha, the textbook also is known by the word Tattva Bodha. Why? Because is this textbook also serves as means of knowledge. And if you see the meaning of the word Tattva, what is Tattva Bodha? What does the word Tattva Bodha mean? Bodha means knowledge. Bodha. In Tamil also we have the word Bodhanai. Bodhikiravar.
Bodhanai.
Yeah. Bodhanai and of the we say that. Bodhanai. See, we always, because we don't have many sounds there, we say Bodhanai and Bodhanai everything. That's why others cannot understand. Only Tamil people can understand what we talk. Like others can understand that. No. What I'm saying, because at least we can make out some Gujarati, Hindi and other stuff. And Kannada, Telugu, because they all have sounds, different sounds. In Tamil, we have only one pa. Bodhanai, Bodhanai, for everything, we have only pa. Okay? And we wish, we can pronounce it as we wish. Anyway, Bodhaha means knowledge. Because all Indian languages have these words. Bodhaha. No. We don't have any. That's what is called Menmori. We also say that soft language. not many aspirants.
With many letters. Too many letters.
So you always have to talk high of any language, you know. Say Menmori. And the Telugu is a Sundara Telugu. Kanda Kasturi they'll say. Kanda is a Kasturi. All the languages are. Anyway, all the languages are really great. Because every language, you know, has a contribution by Mahatma, so no problem. Anyway, so here, Tattvam, the Bodhaha means knowledge, and the Tattva means the truth. Truth or the reality, you can say. And the truth of anything, everything, truth of the entire cosmos, truth of oneself is one and the same. Because everything is part of the universe, and you are also part of the creation, part of the whole universe. Therefore, truth of everything must be the truth of yourself. The truth of yourself cannot be different from the truth of anything else. Therefore, the truth, the reality of the entire cosmos, the reality of every being in this universe, the reality of your own self is one and the same. Therefore, Tattva means the reality or the truth, and Bodhaha means knowledge. Therefore, knowledge of the reality is Tattva Bodhaha. Tattva Bodhaha. And this book is called, this book serves as means of knowledge of the Tattvam. Therefore, this book also is known by the word Tattva Bodhaha. Tattva Bodhaha is a Prakarana Grantaha. Remember that. And this book, if you see, if you ask who wrote this book, I told you already, the present later Acharyas wrote Prakarana Granthas. One of the Acharyas who came, some people contradict. I mean, they say it was written by Adi Shankara. No. Adi Shankara did not write this book. But this book has been written by one of the Acharyas who came in the lineage of the teachers of Kanchi Shankara Matha.
That goes back to Adi Shankara.
Adi Shankara, he did not write this.
Yeah, but the Kanchi Madam was formed.
No. When you say any Shankara Matha, is what? They follow the teaching of Adi Shankaracharya. And he's not a present teacher, okay? We only assume that he must have lived long, long ago, not recent. He's not recent with a person. So the author does not mention his name in the textbook. And we say, why? Because the Indra Saraswati is the title of the Acharyas who come in the lineage of Shankara Math, the Kanchi Math. Now we say Vijayendra Saraswati, Jayendra Saraswati, Chandrasekharendra Saraswati and Vasudevendra Saraswati. The Indra Saraswati, the title tells us, because all the Acharyas who came in the tradition of Kanchi Matha, they have the surname, the title. Indra Saraswati title. Some people will have Puri, some people will have Bharati, like that, Tirtha, like that, we have that. And here Indra Saraswati title is for the Acharyas who come in the lineage of Kanchi Matha. And the author of Tattva Bodha does not mention his name there, but in the very beginning of the first, there's a invocatory verse wherein he mentions the name of his teacher, Vasudevendra. Then we make out the author of Tattvabodha is very humble. He pays his respects to his teacher by the name Vasudevendra Saraswati. Therefore, you know, this book is by one of the acharyas who came in the lineage of the tradition of Shankaracharya's disciples, especially from Kanchi Mata. Doesn't matter who wrote it, which mat he belongs to, we want a good subject matter for our understanding. Tattvabodha is an excellent textbook. Excellent, excellent, fantastic book. You will see the beauty of it. How it presents the subject matter.
I know we are sidetracking, but is the Ananda Saraswati comes from
somewhere? Sringeri.
Is it? Ah, I see.
Actually, Sava Swamiji.
Yeah.
Now we have to enter in the textbook. You all have got the textbook now. You can see the book begins with the prayer. You know meaning, now you know the meaning of the word Tattvabodha. You know why the textbook also is meant by the word Tattvabodha. You know who is the author of the textbook. Now we are entering into the first verse. And the first, as soon as you enter, what you see first is the invocatory verse. Why the textbook begins with an invocation? That you should know. If we see, even this is follow, you know, in keeping with the traditional Vedic tradition. If we see Veda, we do not begin any Vedic chanting or any karma or any study without having the invocatory verse. That is why all we say three times Shanti Sahana Avatu, all those Shanti mantras we have in Upanishads. We have many Shanti mantras in Upanishads. For every Veda, we have Shanti mantra. We always begin our class with the Shanti Mantra. And here the teacher also begins his textbook with an invocatory verse. Why? Because we always seek Bhagavan's grace for the completion of the work we take up. You know, for achieving what we really want to achieve. Because the completion, the fulfillment of a desire, completion of the undertaking, endeavor, is very, very important. Otherwise, it's not good. So, we need the grace. We can, even the pursuit of knowledge, you know, to move on without any obstacles, we need Bhagavan's grace. Therefore, always it is invocatory verse. And why? Because we say, I told you in one of my previous classes, the success in anything depends upon three factors. To achieve anything, three factors, no, we are dependent on three factors. We say first is, we have to make efforts, adequate efforts. Prayatnaha. Then we are dependent on what? Grace, Daivam. And we have to wait for the time, kalaha. Prayatnaha, daivam and kalaha. If we do not make any efforts, you can never have Bhagavan's grace. Bhagavan will think this person is very lazy, doesn't make any effort, I should not help him. Without our efforts, we cannot expect Bhagavan's grace. And even if we make efforts, if we are not prayerful, without Bhagavan's grace, mere effort also, we cannot achieve anything. Without Bhagavan's grace. So we have to make efforts prayerfully, so we'll also have Bhagavan's grace. And if we have to wait for the time, definitely we will achieve.
Daivam is prayer.
No. Daivam stands for the grace.
Grace.
So when I said Daivam, anything pertaining to Deva, the Lord, is Daivam. Anything pertaining to any given phenomenon is called Daivam. I tell you one thing. An obstacle also can come in any obstacle, you know, caused by the natural calamities. Also what? Any obstacle which comes in our way, in fact, is caused by what? We said devata kopaha. Devata kopaha. Kopaha means what? Our own papa karmas, our own phalam, sometimes come as an obstacle, the pratibandhas. There will be obstacles. If we want to do something, we make all efforts or prayer, but still there may be obstacles. And so those obstacles, and who are responsible for the obstacles? We may say this person, that person, all those people. Really speaking, any obstacle, why it comes? That is our own papa karma phalam comes as an obstacle. But we can't say, well, obstacles are there, we can't remain without progressing also. So we have to overcome those obstacles and still continue to, you know, progress. And to ward off the obstacles, to overcome the obstacles, still to progress, proceed and progress and persevere and achieve the end, all that we need is strength, inner strength. And for that strength, we need grace. And for the grace, we need to pray. Pray, tap grace, have strength, overcome obstacles, or ward off obstacles, and proceed, progress, persevere, without giving up, no, without losing heart, achieve the end. That is the thing here. So here we say, and see, any obstacles, this is the obstacle also is daivam. Grace also is daivam. Obstacle also is daivam, grace also is daivam, really speaking. So tit for tat means what? If the daivam comes as an obstacle, win the grace of the daivam and then overcome the obstacle. That's the only way. For which be prayerful. And here also the teacher is very conscious that he is uttered right in Tattva Bodha to give the whole Vedantic vision in a nutshell. Okay, and he writes it. And he thought he should be able to complete the work, even as the smallest work. And he begins his work with a prayer. And sometimes in our culture, the whole Vedic culture itself is that then the prayer plays a very, very important role. Prayer is a must. Prayer is always seek grace. For artha pursuit, for kama pursuit, for dharma pursuit, for jnana pursuit, for moksha pursuit, whatever is your pursuit, seek Bhagavan's grace. Make adequate, proper efforts. And then be prayerful and tap Bhagavan's grace. And okay, efforts and grace always help you to achieve something in a time. Very, very important. For artha also, that's why we need to pray. That's why you build a house, buy a house, before entering into the house, Griha Pravesha is what? Housewarming ceremony is bring Bhagavan there, first pray, I will enter. Even first you are switching on your stove, no? First again, there is a puja, Agni puja, then you boil the milk. And any first food offered to Bhagavan, then you start eating. The first food we offer to Bhagavan. Everything, this, you know, worship, pray, and then start. Because we don't do anything without bringing Ishvara in life. That is very, very important. So here the teacher, and here, of course, imagine, for artha pursuit, kama pursuit, dharma pursuit, everything you need Bhagavan's grace. And what about the moksha pursuit? What about the jnanam pursuit? Of course, we definitely need Bhagavan's grace. That's why avan arulal, avantal patri, we always say. Avan arulal, avantal patri. Now, even to know Bhagavan, to worship Bhagavan, to pray to Bhagavan, you need Bhagavan's grace. That's why we pray here. So, the teacher here presents and then invokes the grace. And we can always, this Vedic culture also allows one thing, that the teacher of the guru can replace Bhagavan. One can look at the guru also as, you know, okay, I mean Bhagavan, if he is a proper teacher of Shastras. That's why the verse comes here, and he says, he bows to his guru, who is known by the word, who is known by the name Vasudevendra Saraswati, and he says, we see how the verse goes now.
Vasudevendra Yogindram, Vasudevendra Yogindram, Natva Jnana Pradam Gurum, Natva Jnana Pradam Gurum, Vasudevendra Yogindram, Vasudevendra Yogindram.
Can you see the book?
Vasudevendra Yogindram,
Vasudevendra Yogindram,
Natva,
Natva,
Jnana Pradam Gurum,
Jnana Pradam
Gurum, Mumukshunam,
Mumukshunam,
Hitarthaya,
Hitarthaya,
Tattva-bodho-bhidhiyate,
Tattva-bodho-bhidhiyate,
Vasudevendra-yogindram,
Vasudevendra-yogindram,
Natva,
Natva,
Jnana-pradam-gurum,
Jnana-pradam-gurum,
Mumukshunam,
Mumukshunam,
Hitarthaya,
Hitarthaya,
Tattva Bodho Bhidhiyate,
Tattva Bodho Bhidhiyate.
So he says here, the Abhidhiyate means, actually that's literal translation, you can also see afterwards. Abhidhiyate is presented here, is given here. What is presented here? He says Tattva Bodha, the textbook which serves as means of knowledge of the reality and which is known by the name Tattva Bodha is presented here. And for whose purpose, for whose benefit, who will benefit by reading this book? Mukshunam Hitarthaya. Hitartha means what? For the benefit of Mukshunam, for the benefit of Mukshus. You should know the word first here, Mumukshuhu. Have I ever told you the word Mumukshuhu? Anyway, Mokshaha means freedom. And Mumuksha means desire for freedom from limitations. Mumuksha, desire for freedom from limitations is Mumuksha, which is naturally there in every human mind. But one has to discover this desire which is already there. One who has understood that he is desirous of moksha is a mumukshuhu. Mumukshuhu is the one who has desire for moksha. One who is desirous of moksha. One who has desire for moksha, or one who is desirous of accomplishing moksha, is a mumukshuhu. Is it clear? So mumukshunam means mukshukkalukku. When you say mukshunam hitarthaya means for the benefit of those who are desirous of moksha. Okay, mokshaha. This tattva bodha, this textbook is presented. Because who needs knowledge of the reality? Who needs knowledge of the truth? One, those who want to be free from limitations. Otherwise, it is meaningless. Therefore, mukshunam hitarthaya. Those who are desirous of accomplishing moksha, they need the knowledge of the reality. Therefore, tattva bodha, this is presented for the benefit of the mukshus. But how does he do it? Natva jnana pradam gurum, Vasudevendram yogindram natva. Yes, natva, having bowed. Natva means having bowed to my teacher Vasudevendra. Okay, having bowed to my teacher Vasudevendra. And who is the yogindraha? Who is exalted of the jnanis, exhort of the yogis. Yogi here simply means a jnani. No, who's exalt of the men of vision, Yogi Indraha. Indraha means actually exaltedness is always expressed through the word Indra. So Yogi Indraha means Yogil Talevan. Yogil Kallam Talevan Sana. What does it mean? The exalt of the jnanis, exalt of the men of wisdom. My teacher, Vasudevendra Yogindram, Natva Bhaving, having bowed to, having paid my prostrations to him, salutations to him. And who is this teacher? He uses Jnana Pradam Gurum. Having bowed to my teacher, Guruhu. And who is the Jnana Pradaha? And the Sattva Bodha is presented here. And in the first sentence he says, having bowed to my teacher, when he said, the word Guruhu. There is a word Guruhu. Have you seen that? Guruhu. Natva Jnana Pradam Gurum. Guruhu means what? Who is the Guruhu? Guruhu is not that one doesn't need to say, he is my Guru, she is my Guru, that is my Guru. No. The word Guruhu should not be really revealed out. Who is a Guru should be kept very, very high respectfully in your mind. One doesn't need to show, this is my Guru. He is my Guru. Like that, one doesn't need to really openly say that. Very, 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 very sacred that is. It's not to be talked about. See, Guruhu means what? The letter Gu stands for darkness of ignorance and Ru stands for elimination of the darkness of ignorance. So, Guruhu is the one who dispels the darkness of ignorance. And who is the one who dispels the darkness of ignorance? Well, who can remove the darkness of ignorance? Only the one who one who teaches, imparts knowledge through communication, not by touching or anything. Okay, simply by touching, simply by hugging, simply by making this, looking at the person, staring at the person, not work. Knowledge cannot be given. Knowledge has to be imparted through communication. The jnana pradaha. Then if we don't say this, we will be against Vedic tradition. Vedic tradition emphasizes the teaching through communication. There is no way of teaching without communicating. Because people talk about this, talk about sparsha diksha, moksha diksha, that diksha, this diksha, all confusions are there. That's why I have to say in between here, just by touching, just by giving you something. Nothing will work. It will help, no? It can only entangle. Emotionally, it can be blackmailed, that's all. Really speaking, it doesn't give you any clarity. It doesn't give you real strength. So the teaching, jnana pradaha means, jnanam prakarshena dadati iti jnana pradaha. The bestower of knowledge. How does he, the one who gives, one who imparts knowledge through communication, and one who pours out totally without any inhibition is the one who shares all that one knows totally with the student very clearly. No? He is the bestower of knowledge. Jnana Pradaha, and he is the Guruhu. Jnana Pradaha alone can be a Guruhu. The teacher is not the Jnana Pradaha, there is no Gurutvam. How can a person remove the darkness of ignorance if he is not a bestower of knowledge? Only through giving knowledge, one really dispels the darkness of ignorance, and he is Jnana Pradaha Guruhu. He also defines the meaning of the word Guruhu in the first very sentence. So the teacher says, Tattva Bodha teacher says here, having bowed to my teacher, the bestower of knowledge, the exalted of all the yogis, Vasudevendra Saraswati, who is also Vasudeva, also happens to be the name of the Lord Bhagavan Krishna. Okay, so bowing to my teacher, bowing to Bhagavan Krishna, the Vasudeva, the best, who is also Jagadguru, okay, the bestower of knowledge, the dispeller of darkness of ignorance. And here I present Tattva Bodha for the benefit of those who are desirous of moksha. Is it clear? This is the first meaning of the first invocatory verse. Say that now.
Vasudevendra yogindram natva jnanapradam gurum mumukshunam hitarthaya tatva bodho vidhiyate.
And the teacher enters into the subject matter of the textbook. This book also is presented in a dialogue. You can see, we have to imagine there is a student sitting in front of the teacher and the teacher is answering. Or the teacher teaches, then the student asks the question. As long as the teacher is talking, the student is not supposed to interrupt. When the student teacher finishes talking, the student can ask question, not in between. So the teacher begins his teaching. He says, "Now come on, we shall explain. And here you will see let us see the textbook text now. Sadhana chatushtaya sampanna adhikarinam moksha sadhana bhutam tatva viveka prakaram vakshyamaha sadhana chatushtaya sampanna adhikarinam moksha sadhana bhutam tatva viveka prakaram vakshyamaha. So vakshyamaha means what? We shall explain here. The teacher says, we shall explain here. What are you going to explain here? Tatva viveka prakaraha. No, the prakaraha means method. We shall explain in this book the method of tatva viveka. Vivekaha means discriminative understanding, discriminative knowledge. So we shall explain here the discriminative knowledge of what the reality is and what the reality is not. When you say discriminative knowledge of the truth, we shall explain here the method of the discriminative knowledge of the reality. When you say the discriminative knowledge of the reality, the very sentence implies, why can't we say we shall explain the knowledge of the reality instead of saying discriminative knowledge of the reality? Because discriminative knowledge means always two things are very clearly expressed, presented. See, what the reality is, what the reality is not. Understand? We have to know both discriminatively. Oh, this is not the reality, this is the reality. Okay, understanding both very clearly what it is, not what it is. Therefore, we shall explain in this book the method of arriving at what the reality is, what the reality is not. We shall explain the method of discriminative knowledge of what the truth is, what the truth is not. So, tatva viveka prakaraha means what? Method of the discriminative knowledge of what the reality is, what the reality is not. It's called Tattva Vivekaha. Please understand, Jnanam means knowledge. But Vivekaha, when you say, Vivichya Jnanam, Pahuttu Aridal. In Tamil, we have beautiful word, Pahuttu Aridal. So, Vivichya Jnanam is Vivekaha. So, Viveka Prakaram Vakshyamaha. Why should we know what the reality is and what the reality is not? Because we need to know what the self is, what the self is not. Because, understand, knowing what the reality is, what the reality is not is what? Knowing what the self is, knowing what the self is not. If we have the discriminative knowledge of what the self is, what the self is not, then all our problems will be solved. Therefore, the solution for our problem of bondage, the so-called problems, is what? Knowledge. Therefore, what we seek ultimately in our life is moksha, the freedom. We want to be relieved of all the problems, the binding problems, and the so-called sorrows and things. Therefore, he says, moksha sadhana bhutam. Sadhana means what? Means. This discriminative knowledge of what the reality is, what the reality is not, what the self is, what the self is not, is the only means for moksha. Therefore, moksha sadhana bhutam, he tells, we shall explain the method of the discriminative knowledge of the reality, which is the only means for moksha, moksha sadhana bhutam. In the first sentence, he tells, but this method of this discriminative knowledge of the self, which is the only means for moksha, this can be given to whom? Who can we give? It is not enough if a person is a mumukshu. It is not enough if a person is a jigyasu. If one who wants to know the reality, one who wants to be free, naturally becomes one who, naturally the one, he becomes desirous of knowledge. Because he knows knowledge is the only means. But even if he has desire for knowledge, even if he knows moksha is the ultimate end, that person will be qualified for knowledge. Or he says, sadhana chatushtaya sampanna adhikarinam. This method is given to, okay, the means of knowledge is given to, for, given to the one who is an adhikari. Adhikari. Who is adhikari here? The one who is qualified. In Tamil language, adhikari means different. Officer. In fact, adhikaraha means what? Adhikari means one who deserves. One who is qualified is adhikaraha means what? Adhikari is the one who deserves. The position is adhikari. Not one who takes the office, okay? One who deserves that position is adhikari. In Tamil language, adhikari means any office is adhikari. One who deserves the position. One who is efficient to do that work. Similarly, here adhikari means one who is eligible. Adhikaraha means eligibility, qualification, yogyata, tahudi. Adhikari is the one who has that eligibility, one who is eligible, one who is qualified. Yogya one, okay, is the adhikari. And who is adhikari for this moksha and jnanam, tattva viveka? Who is adhikari for tattva viveka? He says, sadhana chatushtaya sampannaha. Sadhanam means means, okay. And chatushtaya means set of four. Sadhana chatushtaya sampannaha means the one who is endowed with fourfold qualifications. So he says, this method of discriminative knowledge of what the reality is, what the reality is not, is the only means for moksha. And this is presented here for those who are eligible, Now, being endowed with fourfold qualifications. So once he states that, we'll be naturally, we are already mukshus. Mukshus means we are desirous of moksha. And we are also jigyasus, we are desirous of knowledge. And naturally, we will be interested in knowing what are the fourfold qualifications. Whether, let me see whether I am qualified or not. If I am not qualified, let me make efforts to become, let me make myself adequately qualified. That interest should come. Therefore, he says, sadhana chatushtaya sampanna adhikarinam moksha sadhana bhutam tattvaveka prakaram vakshyamaha. We shall explain here this method, okay, the method of arriving at what reality is, what reality is not, and which is the only means for moksha and for those who are eligible, being endowed with fourfold qualifications, for the eligible people. Because please listen, the word sampat in Sanskrit, in Tamil also we have sampat means wealth. Sampat means what? Wealth. Sampat also means virtue. And sampannaha is one who is virtuous. One who is endowed with these fourfold qualifications is virtuous and wealthy. He has the wealth of qualifications. Once your qualifications are wealth, isn't it? Because you can any educational qualification is a wealth. Because you use it and you earn money. You become qualified for thing, eligibility. So here even this qualification also is what? The qualification required for jnanam, which is the greatest of wealth. All forms of wealth. Therefore, because moksha is wealth, jnanam is wealth, and the qualification required for jnanam also is what? Wealth. And then he says, those who are endowed with the fourfold qualifications, and we can tell this tattva viveka prakaram. And the student asks the question. Look at this. Sadhana chatushtayam kim? Sadhana chatushtayam kim? He's asking, immediately he jumps and asks the question, come on, what is it sadhana chatushtayam? I should know. Let me see whether I'm qualified or not. If I'm not, let me make all my efforts to become qualified. I can't afford to lose moksha and jnana. That is the idea. Sadhanam, you know, the means. And chatushtayam, a set of four. Kim means what? What is that set of fourfold qualifications? Fourfold means. So, you can ask, what are the fourfold qualifications? What are the fourfold qualifications? So, the teacher explains, see that, nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekah. Number one qualification is what? Nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekah. We will explain later on. Just know this much is enough today. See, nitya, anitya, vastu, vivekah means, see, again discrimination comes. One has to have discriminative understanding of what is nityam, what is anityam. Nityam means what? Permanent, eternal. Anityam means what? Impermanent, time-bound. One should be very clear about what is nityam and what is anityam. What is time-bound, what is timeless. What is permanent, what is impermanent. What is eternal, what is ephemeral. One should know. Therefore, he says, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. We are going to explain later on. The teacher, student is going to ask again, what is nitya anitya vastu vivekaha? He will ask. The student will ask, the teacher again will explain. So, I am going to explain this in that context. Now, you know, what are the fourfold qualifications? You need not know, understand. He says, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, first qualification. And second qualification is what? Iha. Yeah. Amutra,
amutra,
artha,
artha,
phala,
phala,
bhoga,
bhoga,
viragaha.
Viragaha.
You can say viragaha or vairagyam. Both mean the same. Not Tamil vairagyam. We have a lot of misconceptions of the words here. That are in our languages. Vairagya means their adamancy. Being adamant about not doing something, eating something, going somewhere. I won't go there. I won't talk to that person. I won't. This is what they mistake as Vairagyam there. In Tamil language. I don't know about the Gujarati language. Adamancy. No? But here Vairagya means, please understand, not at all that means. Vairagya means here dispassion. Dispassion means desirelessness. Please, and don't mistake here, Shastram does not say one should not have desires. And, okay, when I say desireless, dispassion means desirelessness. Desirelessness, if it is a qualification, immediately you will think Shastram says I should not have desires. No. Shastram does not say that you should not have desires. Shastram does not say you should suppress your desires also. Shastram does not say you could give up your desires. No. Shastram does not say you should not have desires, you should suppress your desires, you should give up your desires. No. Shastram only says, it is possible for one to have dispassion, to become desireless. One point. How can one discover dispassion? By understanding the limitations of objects. Every child who starts playing with the toys, a 5-year-old, he had so great passion for the toys. He was playing, enjoying those toys. He was hoarding toys. The same child, when he becomes 15-year-old, he throws them all. He's not interested. That means what? Has grown out of desire for the toys. Why? When he becomes 15, he understands his interests are different and he cannot really have the pleasure that he seeks in the same thing, same toys. The toy which he was enjoying once upon a time cannot give him the pleasure what he seeks at the age of 15. So naturally he grows out of desire for them. You have to discuss something more sublime to develop dispassion towards what you were, what was an object of pleasure before. That's all. This Vairagya means dispassion towards all the pleasures, heavenly pleasures or pleasures in this world, and also all other objects, all other pursuits in life, knowing their limitations, that they cannot give me what I seek in life. Because many people missed it. The translations are very wrong. And people think, I have to give up desires. No. You cannot give up desires, in fact. You don't need to give up any desires. You can have all the desires, but naturally one has to discover dispassion towards other things. So dispassion itself implies maturity. One's maturity born of the understanding of the limitations of things that they cannot give me what I seek in life, thereby they discover dispassion towards that. Understand? This is Vairagyam. Not only for the pleasures in this world, even pleasures in higher lokas. You will tell, we talk about these heavenly pleasures. So this is dispassion. It is simple thing. Suppose when you go to supermarket, there's so many things are sold and you go to the market for a given purpose. Suppose when you go to buy vegetables, your main aim is to buy vegetables that day. Or sometimes maybe some grocery things also. And you won't go to the medical shop. If everything is available, you won't go to the medical shop. You go straight to where vegetables are there. And you pick up the... Why? You don't go to the other side of the medical shop. But because you are not interested in medicines. What you want is this, so you go there straight, you don't see this side. That means that's all. Because you don't go this side because you don't get what you want there. What you want vegetable, you have to go to vegetable site or the market. So when you go to buy medicines, you don't care where the vegetables are sold. You just ignore the side of the market. Because you don't get what you want there, so you don't go there. Yes, sir. Similarly here also, you know what I want ultimately in my life is moksha, and that moksha cannot be attained which is already there. All that I need to know what moksha is all about, for which I need to know what the reality is. Therefore, knowledge of the reality alone can give me moksha. And other things cannot give me moksha. Once you understand this, naturally, you grow out of desire for other things. What I seek is moksha ultimately. Other things cannot give me moksha because none alone can give me moksha. Then naturally you develop dispassion towards other things. The other things cannot give me what I seek in life. This understanding is what? Understand the limitations of other objects. Every object has its own limitation. Why? It cannot give me what I want. This understand the limitations of other pursuits, other objects, other pleasures, thereby growing out of desire for them. No? And then because having passion for knowledge is what? Dispassion towards other things. This is called vairagyam. Understand? So, nityanitya vastu vivekaha. I'll explain nityanitya vastu vivekaha again when the question comes. So, the discriminative understanding of what is permanent and what is impermanent, okay, and the dispassion towards all the pleasures of life, understand the limitations, that they cannot give what they seek in life. And the third one is Shamadhi Shatka Sampattihi. Shamadhi Shatka Sampattihi means what? He says, again, shamaha is one of the disciplines. The sixfold disciplines are there. Of the four qualifications, we have six disciplines also. One of the four qualifications is what? Being endowed with sixfold disciplines. So, endowed with sixfold disciplines beginning with the shamaha is one of the qualifications. We'll see that shamaha, damaha, uparamaha, titiksha, shraddha, samadhanam. These are the sixfold disciplines. We'll see that later on in the book itself. And the fourth qualification is mukshutvam. Mukshutvam means what? This desire for moksha. If there's no desire for moksha, how there cannot be desire for knowledge. If the desire for knowledge is not there, How can the person be taught? Understand? It is easy for the teacher can teach only the student has some desire for knowledge. Therefore, mukshutvam, desire for moksha, thereby desire for knowledge, is the fourth qualification. So these are the fourfold qualifications, and we have to understand. So he says, sadhana chatushtayam kim? The student asks. The teacher tells, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Say that. Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Iha amutra artha phala bhoga viragaha shamadhi shatka sampattihi mukshutvam mukshutvam cha iti. These are the fourfold qualifications. Remember, it is enough. You don't need to really go into the details. But we are going to see, then the student will ask, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha kaha. Very interesting, isn't it? See, you don't need to worry. Just be with me. Let us all be with Tathabodha teacher. Tathabodha student will ask, and the teacher will answer. We'll all learn. You're very good, isn't it? The teacher said, come on, you want moksha? For sadhana means what? You need to have discriminative knowledge of what the self is, what the self is not. And this knowledge can be given only if a person has no fourfold qualifications. Oh my God, what are the fourfold qualifications? Come on, let me know. I don't know what are they. And he enumerated nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, discriminative understanding of what is permanent and what is impermanent. Then dispassion towards all forms of pleasures. Then what? Shamadhi shatka sampattihi. being endowed with the sixfold disciplines. One should have sixfold disciplines. And the desire for moksha. A desire for moksha is not there, then definitely there cannot be desire for knowledge of the truth. The desire for knowledge of the truth is not there. How can the teacher teach, first of all? Understand? So these are the fourfold qualifications the teacher said. Then the student is very sincere, okay? And he's asking, okay, you explained in four sentences, but what do you really mean by nitya anitya vastu vivekaha? What do we mean by discriminative knowledge of, time bound, what is eternal, what is time bound? Why should I know what discriminately what is time bound and what is eternal? And first the question, let me tell you that and let me just stop the class. Okay? So he says, nitya,
nitya,
anitya,
anitya,
vastu vivekaha,
vastu vivekaha,
kaha,
kaha.
See, kim kaha, you will, by the time you finish Sattabodha text, you will learn a lot of Sanskrit words. Kim means what? Neuter interrogative word. What? Kaha also means what? What and who? Masculine interrogative. Who and what and which? So he is asking nitya nitya vastu vivekaha kaha. What do we mean by vivekaha? Discrimination. Discriminative knowledge of what is discrimination between what is permanent, what is impermanent, what is eternal and what is ephemeral, what is timeless and what is time bound. How the student has to analyze here. The teacher says, come on, all that we want in life is, we want to achieve in life, have already been categorized into four as artha, kama, dharma, moksha. There is no fifth pursuit. Is there anything which you want to achieve which doesn't come under the category of any of the four? No. All that you want in life can be brought into the category of artha or kama or dharma or moksha. There is no fifth pursuit. Please be very clear first. And what is artha? Whatever you pursue for security is artha. No? And to have some change in the routine, whatever you pursue, that is a kama pleasure. Whatever you do to have break from the routine is a pleasure, is a kama. Of course, you know the values and then you live a life of values. You are charitable and you do something, that's also for ultimately for happiness. Ultimately what you seek is happiness. You want to be peaceful and quiet. And not that you want to be disturbed, peaceful for time bound for some time and you want to become unhappy again. No. All of us always seek everlasting happiness. We want to be peaceful, we want to be happy, always, everywhere, with everybody. That means we want everlasting, limitless happiness. Timeless happiness. So what I seek is everlasting happiness, timeless happiness. And what is the nature of the ends I have in life? You have to see that. Artha, whatever I pursue for artha, seeking security, how do I pursue, how do I gain that? By doing some karma. I do something or the other, always I have to work for it. To achieve anything in life, I work for it. I work hard. A work means I act, I perform actions, I do my duties and achieve something. In the form of any artha, in any form, wealth or money or anything, whatever you have, all that I pursue is achieved by only by doing something as a result of karma. What is the nature of the karma? Understand. Karma is time bound. Any big karma or a small karma, any actions, big or small, a biggest karma consisting of many units of actions, any karma is time bound. You don't do the karma always, Every karma is time bound in nature. Therefore, the karma phalam also must be what? Time bound. Simple. The means you use to achieve something, if it is a karma, and the karma phalam also is what? Time bound. time, karma is time bound, so the karma phalam also must be time bound. So artha is what? Karma phalam. Karma phalam is what? You all gain, anything gained as a result of karma you do. Listen, karma phalam. Time bound. What about the pleasures? Pleasures means, no, it is actually, pleasure is the state of mind. A time-bound in nature. Why? The pleasure, the goodness, you keep yourself in good humor. The pleasure is always dependent on external object. Vishayanandaha. Always dependent on an external object. You have to go somewhere, you have to listen to something, you have to watch something, you have to be talking to some people. Always it's dependent on external object. Only then you can have pleasure. So it's dependent on external object. And even for that you have to work. Okay, even if you have, suppose you want to have a break from the routine, you want to have, want to go and watch some movie or somewhere, some film in the cinema, and you go there, you have to spare time, energy, you have to travel, you have to work, and even to, again you have to lose some artha in the form of money to buy ticket, for which you must have worked hard. Nothing easily can, you have to work. See, no pleasure is easily available. You have to really, that implies hard work. Pleasure also, if you go for holiday, it's for pleasure, no? And you have to work and earn money, some keep some money, then go, come, spend and come back. Therefore, pleasure is always not free, at the cost of something. Therefore, pleasure always what? Is gained as a result of karma. Artha and kama are the two ends you gain as a result of karma, karma phalam. Karma is time bound, the karma phalam also is time bound. Is it clear? Then what about the dharma? Okay, you are highly charitable, you are helpful, and you live a life of values. Where do you express? Only karma. Dharma also is expressed through karma. You're charitable, if you're charitable, what do? You help others, serve. Whatever you do is what? Karma. And suppose you live a life of values, you speak the truth. That means you express your values only in living. You live your values only in doing karma. Therefore, dharma also is what? Karma based. But dharma also is karma based, therefore, karma is time bound. Living a life of values is very, very important. But even then, living a life of values also can produce only punyam. Living a life of dharma, being charitable, doing service, the free service without being paid, or living a life of values, all these things, dharma governed life will result in gaining lot of punyam. Punyam also can translate into only pleasures which are time bound. Therefore, I understand artha, kama, dharma, all the pursuits are important in life. I have to pursue artha. Understand? I have to have pleasures in life. Understand? I have to live a life of dharma, but I have to know their limitations. Shastram does not say don't pursue artha, kama, dharma. Shastram emphasizes that one should pursue artha, kama, dharma, but don't overvalue them. Don't give. Understand, it's called shobhana dhyasa. If you give more value to something than what it deserves, it's called shobhana dhyasa. Either we undervalue or overvalue. We never value things correctly. We do not know the value of knowledge. We do not know the value of really what we seek in life. And we do not know, but we overvalue artha, kama, dharma. What can artha give? Artha can give you an infrastructure, where you need to live. And kama can really give you strength again. Whenever you feel low, something, some people dejected, tired, And this change in the routine gives you some strength and to go back to pursue with your other artha pursuit again. That's all karma can give. It is time bound. It can't make you happy always. Artha cannot make you happy always. And similarly, dharma also is what? Very important to live a life of dharma. Without living a life of dharma, you cannot be happy at all. Without pursuing artha, you cannot be happy at all. But without having some pleasures also, you cannot be happy at all. But living artha, kama, dharma, pursuit itself is not enough for you to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody. This is what understanding the limitations of artha, kama, dharma, that all of them, all the pursuits are important, but they are time bound. If I expect, everlasting happiness through, if I think artha can give me everlasting happiness, if I think kama can give me, the time bound pleasure can make me happy always. If I think, living a life of dharma itself is enough, it will make me happy forever. If I think, then I have shobhana dhyasa. I overvalue them. Understand? We should know the usefulness of artha kama dharma. The advantage of pursuing artha kama dharma. We should know the importance of pursuing artha kama dharma. But we should overvalue them. We should know their limitations. They are all time bound in nature. See, what I want is timeless happiness. Time-bound artha-kama-dharma, earned through time-bound karma, cannot give me timeless, everlasting happiness. How can a finite thing give me an infinite happiness, infinite end? Help me as means for accomplishing infinite end. Is it clear? This what is vivekaha. What vivekaha here? Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. What I want in life, listen carefully, what I want in life is time bound, timeless, infinite, everlasting happiness, mokshaha. I don't want to be happy tomorrow, day after, I don't mind becoming unhappy. No, I want to be happy forever. What I want is everlasting happiness, which is mokshaha. And these, what is the nature of artha kama dharma? They're all time bound in nature. So time-bound ends cannot be the means for timeless. Time-bound cannot give me the time-bound, timeless mokshaha. Therefore, I know they're all time-bound. Therefore, it is wrong on my part to search for timeless happiness, infinite happiness in time-bound things. So once I know this nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, if I have what is time bound and what is timeless, then I will not waste my time, energy. I won't go and waste my time searching for the timeless happiness through artha kama dharma, time bound things. Is it clear? It's very, very important. That means what I want is timeless happiness, everlasting happiness, then I should know what is that infinite thing. If at all there is something infinite, if at all there is timeless reality, timeless thing, that must be only reality known by the word Brahman. I do not know what the reality is implied by the term Brahman. I do not know what Brahman is. I do not know what the reality is. The reality of the universe is the only eternal thing, the beginningless, endless, everlasting thing in this jagat is what? Reality of the universe. Therefore, the reality of the universe is the only infinite thing, only timeless thing, only permanent thing. Other than the reality, Brahman, everything else is time-bound in nature. Everything else is ephemeral, temporary. Everything else is what? Impermanent. Is it clear? First, once I know, reality, the Brahman, is the eternal thing. Everything other than Brahman, all my artha kama dharma pursuits are all the karmas are time bound. Karma palani are time bound. all these arthakama dharmas which I pursue through, pursue as a result of karma, is also what? Time-bound in nature. Even the punyam will give me only time-bound pleasures, not everlasting happiness. So I know the limitations of all of them, okay? Therefore, I won't waste my time and energy. There, I won't go and search for moksha in time-bound things. Through time-bound things. Therefore, it is very important for one to have nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Then what I will do? I will pursue artha for security, for infrastructure. I'll also have pleasures in life. I'll also live a life of dharma to not and punyam, but I will also pursue knowledge of the reality for moksha. Therefore, nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, first one should have. What I seek is nityam. I should seek the nityam through the nityam, not through anityam. It's called nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Once I have nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, then naturally I have dispassion towards all that is anityam. And all the pleasures, whether heavenly pleasures or the pleasures to be enjoyed in this life, even if somebody else comes and tells you, come on, why do you listen to every day, every time go and listen to Sudha Raghunathan, Muni Krishan, that's enough, come on, do some yajna, prescribe the karma kanda and aspire for some heavenly pleasures where you can listen to singing of Gandharvas. You must be tired of singing, listening to only these local musicians. Only this Chitra Swarshan, Padma Subramaniam, they're all out of picture now. And go for Apsaras and Jamba Urvasi dance in heaven. Better go for higher pleasures. Okay? Even if somebody tells, I'll tell you, however greater the pleasure. When the local, go to the nearest nearby in Wimbledon Park, there's a small lake there. Go for all this pension association, get together and get into the car, the bus arrange, and then go to this Wembley Park, local lake, and take some food, eat and come back for pleasures. And sometimes they also go for what? A planned big trip. Go to Birmingham Temple, little far. No, not all this. Go to Alaska, cruise, travel far. And you want to spend bigger holidays. I tell you, any pleasure is time-bound. Okay? Heavenly pleasures are pleasures to be enjoyed in this world. Pleasure is a time-bound. So, once the person has nitya anitya vastu vivekaha, then naturally, he will not have any hatred towards, he won't be frustrated. He will not have any hatred towards any of the pleasures. But he has naturally grown out of desire for pleasures. Dispassion means what? Vairagya means it's just the maturity. Naturally growing out of desire for all forms of pleasures. Knowing the limitation that they cannot give me what I really seek in life. Okay? I don't have any hatred. They cannot give what I seek in life, so I don't need them. Naturally, one becoming desireless toward other pleasures, knowing the limitations, called dispassion. If a person has nitya anitya vastu vivekaha is there, if a person has really discriminative understanding of what is permanent and what is impermanent, naturally he will not be inclined to pursue anything which is time bound. He will be inclined for something timeless. This desirelessness for time-bound things, desire for timeless thing is what? Dispassion. Entertaining a desire only for a timeless thing, not having desire for time-bound things because of the viveka he has, is dispassion. Understand? That's why I say maturity, understanding. It should not be imposed on somebody. I cannot make other person dispassionate. Come on, don't have any desire for other things. Third, that is wrong. I tell you, telling other person not to have desire is the worst papam. If you go on, this is a very wrong thing. Don't have desire for that. Don't have desire for this. In fact, not desire for that or this. Don't have desire. If I tell, it's a papa karma. If I tell somebody, now suppress your desire, it's a papa karma. If I tell somebody, give up your desire, it is wrong. Ippa is always struggling, not knowing how to give up. It is not power. One cannot give up desires, but one can grow out of desire. How? By understanding what I want is different, and this cannot give me what I want, so I am not interested in that. We all develop dispassion the whole life. But for to what? That's a different question. As we grow, we grow out of desire for so many things. Whatever you valued as a young man, you don't have value for that anymore. I mean, not you.
You picked the right one.
Always we grow. You see children growing. Even the mother expects you to grow out of desire for things. Now every mother and father go to the toys, the shop. Even that very the board is very attractive for me. Tea red, O yellow, and then white green, and S blue. Even the toys colorful. The board, the big shop of only toys. And young mother and father go with the 2-year-old child, or 1-year-old child, and 3-year-old child, or 5-year-old child, and get even 10-year-old child, and get what is suitable for the age, and then buy. They buy a lot of money, spend money, and then buy. They find joy in that. But the same mother and father who feels so much of joy in getting the child the toy will be very, very unhappy. The child continues to play with the same toy even at the age of 20. Very unhappy. My God, I don't know why I got this for this fellow. No mother expects the child, I got it for 10 pounds those days, keep it safe and play with it all the time. No mother will say that. Come on, break it and throw it away and then grow. Even the mother spent 100 pounds for the small toy. He doesn't expect the child to be playing with the toy even at the age of 25 and 20. I spent 100 pounds those days, I bought it for you, worked hard and earned money, keep it safe and play with it all the time. No mother will say that. You'll be very unhappy. In fact, she expects the child to know the limitation of all these toys. That is why it's the proper way of making the child grow out of desire for things. The Bhagavan also gives everything. Come on, you enjoy everything. Okay? Have everything. Have all pleasures. Bhagavan also will be happy only when, even at the age of 65, we still continue to be asking for Bhagavan. Bhagavan, please give me that and give me that. Bhagavan will be very unhappy with us. Parents will be unhappy with the children who want to play with the toys. The age of 20. No? Bhagavan will be, I have given you everything, all these years of life, been eating and enjoying. You haven't understood the limitations of all the pleasures. Bhagavan does not say don't enjoy pleasures. Bhagavan expects us to grow out of desire for things, knowing their limitations. You can never grow out of desire for objects unless you know their limitations. Understand? So enjoy them, know the limitations, what they can give, what they cannot give. So have them for what they can give, but don't seek what they cannot give there. Then grow out of desire for them. Okay? Now, I don't say grow out of. Naturally, one has to grow out. Growing out of desire for things is a very natural thing. One has to know the limitations. And one has to know what I seek is different, that this cannot give what I seek in life. That understanding is what? Dispassion. Therefore, dispassion is something which one has to discover. This is vairagyam. And we have Shama Hatka Sampati. We'll see when others also come. Because these things are okay, very simple things. And the Shama Hatka, I won't really give a clear picture. And we'll see third qualification in the next class.